Welcome to Sacred Space on West Limerick 102. My name is Lorraine Buckley. This morning's programme is the first of a two-part feature on the Cistercian Sisters of St. Mary's Abbey in Glencairn, County Waterford. During the programme, I will be speaking with Sister Sarah Brannigan, the Vocations Director, and Sister Michelle Slattery, the Novice Mistress. So I invite you to sit back and have a listen to this. Good morning and welcome to Sacred Space here in West Limerick 102. My name is Lorraine Buckley. This morning we're broadcasting from a very, very beautiful part of the country. I'm in St. Mary's Abbey in Glencairn in County Waterford, and with me this morning is Sister Sarah Brannigan. Good morning, Sister Sarah.
Hello, Lorraine. You're very welcome to Glencairn.
Thank you so much, and I brought the weather with me, or perhaps I was here beforehand.
Beautiful sunny day out here.
It is absolutely glorious. The monastery here is on about 200 acres of land. Is that correct?
Yeah, 200 acres of farmland, and the River Blackwater runs through the property.
Lovely.
We have about 50 acres under wood as well.
Wow.
So we're very much.
You're dressed in a black and white habit.
Yes.
Because you're a member of the Cistercian Order. Can you tell me a little bit about the Cistercians?
I suppose the story of the Cistercians begins right back in 1098, when a group of Benedictine monks chose to leave their monastery to start again. They didn't envisage themselves as being Cistercians as such. In fact, the name comes from the place that they chose to establish their new monastery. They just called it the new monastery. So the group was led by a Benedictine monk by the name of Robert of Melun. That's the name of the monastery they came from. This is in France.
Mm-hmm.
Basically, the objective of the monks was that they were doing too good a job in their monastery, living a good monastic life, and so they became rather well connected and successful, and Robert was a very popular man and very sought after as a spiritual leader.
Mm-hmm.
And they wanted to try to step back from the wealth that had accumulated mm-hmm. for them. And I think a key theme for the Cistercians is that they were looking for a more hidden life.
Okay.
So the place that they chose for their site was a very, apparently very inhospitable place, a very mm-hmm. marshy land, and they had to clear forestry, etc., to build their monastery, their church, and their surrounding buildings. And they did this in the spirit of just wanting to kind of move deeper into the desert, if
mm-hmm.
you like,
mm-hmm.
And to deepen their dependence on God and to live more frugally and simply. And really, we refer to Cito as having a spirit of simplicity.
Mm-hmm.
That was their spirit.
And that's part of the call of the Catholic life anyway. The Christian life is to continually kind of let go and go deeper. And, you know,
exactly.
From baptism really until, please God, heaven, we're continually yeah. journeying with the Lord like that.
That's right.
So it's a call for everybody in whatever shape or form that might take.
Yeah, I think so. There's a certain radicality in
there
the Christian
is.
Life.
To follow the Christian message perfectly, well, not perfectly, but to try and do it justice, to live it authentically, you're constantly being challenged, aren't you?
Mm-hmm.
Mm. So Robert sets up this new little community in Cito.
Mm-hmm.
Where does it go from there?
Well, Cito. The Latin mm-hmm. for Cito is Cistercian, so that's the name
oh,
of the
okay.
Cistercians, so
mm-hmm.
that's how they began. There were three main founders, as we understand it. There was Robert and Alberic and Stephen, and so when Robert actually had to return to his Benedictine monastery in the end, and Alberic took over as abbot, and after him, Stephen. And Stephen was actually an Englishman. And it was Stephen who wrote our first constitutions and who wrote an account of the spirit of the order called the Exordium Parvum. And it was Stephen who developed our liturgy. Apparently he sent out monks over the Alps and across Europe to get the authentic texts to make that effort to venerate God mm-hmm. through the liturgy as much as they could. He learned Hebrew in order to translate the Bible for his monks so that they would have an authentic text. So these were men who went all out.
Mm.
They weren't setting out to do anything new. They were, in fact, wanting to live the rule of St. Benedict mm-hmm. as they had been as Benedictines, but I suppose more fully as they thought, or more closely. So it was a Benedictine life, but it developed its own charism, mm-hmm. if you like.
So what then is the Cistercian charism?
Well, the Cistercian charism was really based on this effort to live more simply and closely to the rule. It was very much, Benedict spoke about the monastery as a school of the Lord's service. And St. Bernard, who was one of the early Cistercians, entered just in 1113, just after Cito was founded. He spoke of the monastery as a school of love.
Isn't that beautiful?
So Cistercians were very much bonded together by charity. The sources of our spirituality would be the rule of St. Benedict. And Benedict emphasized, you know, the person coming to the monastery, are they truly seeking God? So that's one aspect of the rule of Benedict and Benedictine spirituality. Another is, do they have zeal for the work of God? And that would be the liturgy of the hours. Do they have zeal for that? That was most important to Benedict. And he spoke about the work of God as something that we should prefer nothing to.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why we take such care with the office. Mm-hmm. And that's very much part of our charism, is the liturgy of the hours.
Mm-hmm.
And then a second source of our spirituality would be, as I said, the spirit of Cito, which, as a general reform of monastic life, was emphasizing poverty and simplicity. And that would have come through in the liturgy and in manual work, and also in the stress that they had on non-involvement in secular affairs,
okay.
a certain distance.
Mm-hmm.
Which had not been the case prior to that in
right.
their Benedictine way of life, which had become increasingly complicated with accretions and various ties that were holding them back from living the rule more simply.
Mm-hmm.
So, and then we have, as I've said, St. Bernard and his contemporaries. They emphasise the experiential quality of monastic life, which is a theme that would speak to people today, I think,
exactly.
the experiential mm-hmm. spirituality, the interior life, fraternal communion and contemplation.
Mm-hmm.
And then by the 17th century, the order went through a period of decline and division, and Abbot de Rancey initiated a reform movement. And his emphasis was on, as we all know, the austerity of the Cistercian life and its contemplative character. Mm-hmm. So he was abbot of La Trappe, and so that's where the name Trappist comes from. So that's they would be the principal influences on our spirituality.
Fantastic. So the Cistercians then, the charism of simplicity and of a community of love, where does it go from there? Did it spread out from France?
Well, there were 21 monks in that original foundation.
Wow.
And Robert went back to Moulins.
Mm-hmm.
And basically the order developed very, very slowly until 1113, when St. Bernard entered Cito with 30 of his relatives.
30?
Yes. He managed to persuade 30 people of the importance of the monastic life. And
wow.
He was very, very unusual. Only in 2 years, by 1115, he was sent as the superior of a new foundation in Clairvaux, mm-hmm. also in France. And by the time of his death, he was personally responsible for establishing 65 monasteries.
65.
He was incredibly active as a Cistercian, and he was very influential in the church of his time as well. And he was a very gifted writer. He was very literary. And so were others in what turned out to be really the golden age of the Cistercian order. We talk about the four evangelists in the Cistercians. Okay. There was Bernard of Clairvaux and William of St. Thierry, Aelred of Rivaux and Gerrick of Igny. And basically what emerged from their writings that really indicated the fruit of the order, because these saints were emerging and spiritual masters, and it was an effective spirituality, very much emphasizing relationship with Christ and the sacred humanity of Christ. It was an effective way of life as well, in that there was a real emphasis on fraternal communion. The common life together. And there was also a strong Marian orientation to their writings. And we all know that St. Bernard was had a huge devotion to Our Lady. And all of these aspects of their spiritual writings have really marked the order, and you know, you can identify them still today.
Even in the office, you have the little anthems to Our Lady.
That's right. Yeah,
beautiful.
They replace the office of Our Lady, which used to be in pre-Vatican II office. We had an office to Our Lady, so now we have the anthems to Our Lady, and we finish the whole day with the Salve Regina, and that's a custom in every house in the order, and every monastery is dedicated to Our Lady, and as is the order.
Beautiful, so. Absolutely beautiful. So when did the Cistercians come to Ireland?
The Cistercians came to Ireland as early as 1147. St. Malachy was responsible for bringing them to Ireland. He was a friend of St. Bernard, and they established themselves in Mellifont, and from there developed a proliferation of Cistercian monasteries all around Ireland, in quite a golden age of Cistercian life in Ireland, as we can see from the ruins of Cistercian monasteries that are still gracing the countryside today.
Wow. But the Cistercian monastery here is the only female, or Cistercian sisters, in Ireland at the moment.
In Ireland at the moment. We believe there were monasteries of Cistercian women before the Reformation.
Oh, wow.
But we're the only monastery since the Reformation for women. But there are five monasteries for men in Ireland.
Mm-hmm. The first piece of music this morning is a beautiful piece of music from the sisters' own album, Laudamus. It's called Lord of All Greatness. So let's have a listen to this.
Thank you. Sacred Space on West Limerick 102.
Welcome back to Sacred Space here on West Limerick 102. My name is Lorraine Buckley and you're listening to an interview with Sister Sarah Branigan from St Mary's Abbey in Glencairn, gone to Waterford.
Part of your role is Vocations Director. How do you find the role?
I really enjoy the job.
I can see that. It comes out from you. As soon as you meet you can see you light up. Are there many ladies discerning at the moment?
We have a few people discerning, mm-hmm. and we've just had two people enter, actually. And Angela and Liz entered on January 6th this year, so they've just finished their postulancy. Oh, Liz is still here, she's going on Monday. Mm-hmm. So we have a six-month postulancy program, and then a month at home, or mm-hmm. a month off, mm-hmm. and then coming back, if all has gone well with the discernment, and they have been received into the novitiate, they begin novitiate when they come back from their month off.
Fantastic.
And they get clothed in the habit.
Ah, yeah. Lovely. Mm. During that month off, are they in contact with the monastery, or is that a complete kind of break for a month where they go away and discern?
No, it's the discernment really is during the postulancy.
Okay.
And they come to a decision at the end of the postulancy with the help of their novice mistress, mm-hmm. And an evaluation process which they do for themselves, which mm-hmm. is very important to listen to where I'm at with mm-hmm. this and mm-hmm. whether this life is for me. And meanwhile, the novice mistress will also evaluate how she senses they're getting on and whether this life will help them to be living out their vocation and help them to be happy. So that takes place towards the end of the postulancy, and then the abbess formally receives them for the next step. So the month off is really a time to be with your family before you take the really definitive step. Mm-hmm. Not that it's a final commitment, but sure. It's a very special step to begin the novitiate. Mm-hmm. And I think it's nice for people to have that month, because as a postulant in Glencairn, we don't have a habit. We wear a skirt and mm-hmm. and no veil or anything like that. So you're still in your own clothes. Mm-hmm. And there's a sense of freedom about it and a sense of space to discern. Mm-hmm. And you're getting to know the community more closely. And it's a time to move in and mm-hmm. become at home. And so I think the month off is that time with your family to fully digest it, mm-hmm. the decision that you've come to, and to have fun. As well.
Very important.
Yes, I know Liz is just really excited to go home right now.
I'm now going to speak with Sister Michelle Slattery, who will tell us a little bit about her role as novice mistress and what happens during the novitiate.
So, Sister Michelle, what is your role as novice mistress?
Yeah, well, Lorraine, I accompany the young women when they come, when they enter, which means making them at home in the life and mm-hmm. helping them understand what we're all about, because it's such a different kind of life from what they were used to. And that, and when they are in tune with the liturgy and all our observances, as we call it, the silence and the community life and that, then it's moving towards novitiate.
Okay.
And that's postulancy. Novitiate, then, the central purpose is the interior life.
Right.
And finding the treasure that we're all looking for, and that finding it in themselves.
Mm-hmm.
And the inward journey, which is quite I wouldn't say struggle, but it's a lifelong task to keep in tune with that inner journey and to live out of it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what's going to enrich their lives and all our activities and all our life together, that the treasure within. And for this, we have a little formation committee to help, and guidelines, and with the abbess there. And but it's just that ongoing work, and not only work, because work, as our effort, as we know, is only a tiny part of it.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of corresponding with grace.
Exactly.
Isn't it?
Yeah, that God moves first all the time. That's everything we do is just in response to that.
Absolutely. Mm. Absolutely. And to learn that now isn't easy sometimes.
Oh, it isn't. The theory is fine. The practice is a bit different.
So that's the task of the novitiate, really, and it's a great privilege, and it's ongoing work, and it's working on oneself all the time as well.
Exactly, yeah. Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah.
I've studied a little bit of catechesis, and what they say is it's the Holy Spirit that's forming both the person that's being catechized and the person doing the catechesis, the Holy Spirit is working on both.
Yeah,
and it must be something similar in novitiate.
Absolutely, and that's why I feel it's a gift. It's even a costly gift sometimes, but not.
Sure.
It isn't really. It's good. It's very good. So the other thing about novitiate then would be. Just the person, is she growing? Is the young woman growing in love of God and ability to relate well?
Mm-hmm.
And the whole thing of becoming more human, more fully human for all of us all the time as well. So that's all that came to mind now.
That is perfect. And as you said, that's a lifelong journey. But it's very important to take part or take place during the novitiate, I'm sure.
Absolutely.
Where you're kind of discerning, is this where God wants you to be?
Right. That's the importance of the novitiate.
Mm-hmm.
And people say it can't be replaced if you miss out on it, what you should be doing there, you know.
Yeah.
I think we had a good study program as well.
Oh, very good. You have a good study program.
Yes,
what did you base it on?
Well, several sisters. It varies. Like, I would do the vows, and having done prayer and the lectio and all that. But somebody would do the history of the order.
Lovely.
Very well. And not only of the order, I should say monastic history, which goes back to Cassian and all those famous people back there.
Mm-hmm.
So they learn that little by little, they're, you know, exposed to it. And then somebody else does Cistercian patrimony, you know, the holy people of our writers, from Bernard and all these, Adrian and all that. That's very good too, you know, yes. And now she's also doing the Psalms, you know, a good in-depth study of the Psalms. So, you know, it's a full program too.
And I love the way it's holistic, that you have the study time and then you're helping to form the person in their prayer life and in their work life and in their community life as well.
Right. I think that's one of the gifts of our life. It's well balanced, you know, and it can depend somehow on how many of us are around and how much work, but not now. We're really quite well situated now, and that's my job too, to try and prioritize with the novices and not allow them to get in too much to other work yet.
Fantastic.
You know.
And I presume the novices do a little bit of work.
Oh, they do a lot. Every morning they're either in the kitchen or the Eucharistic beds or the card department.
Fantastic.
Or whatever. Mm. Or cleaning the house, you know, the big house.
It is a big house.
Or the kitchen, the meals and that. So then in the afternoon we have for our classes and study and mostly nothing else in the afternoon.
It sounds a wonderful life if you're called to it.
It
really
is,
does.
I think it is. Mm. Yes, I believe in it.
And I can tell because your whole being kind of expresses it. You know, if you were sitting across from somebody who was just giving you kind of the rote or whatever it might be, but you can see from yourself that you live the life.
Yeah, well, thank God. I suppose happiness is a big thing, isn't it, Lorraine? You know, is a person happy? If she is, I believe everything else really falls into place.
Exactly.
You know, and if we're not, well, then there's big questions, isn't there?
Definitely.
Not to say that we won't all go through our desert or our dark night or whatever, but having said that, no, the general happiness, even there should be peace deep down, isn't it? Even when there is, God sends us some bit of darkness.
Exactly, because God wants us to be happy.
That's right, that's right. And we would love to have more.
So that's a general invitation to anybody out there who's discerning monastic life. Do visit the Cistercian in St. Mary's Abbey in Glencairn.
Thank you.
Thank you, Sister Michelle.
The second piece of music we're going to listen to this morning is again from the Sisters' album, Laudamus, and it is entitled Psalm 66. So let's have a listen.
Sacred Space on West Limerick 102.
Welcome back to Sacred Space here on West Limerick 102. My name is Lorraine Buckley. You're listening to an interview with Sister Sarah Branigan from St. Mary's Abbey in Glencairn, Gantu, Waterford. Sister Sarah continues to tell us about the steps and formation in the Cistercian life.
At the end of novitiate, there is the taking of simple vows.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a very important step too. And in the Cistercian context, when you make your first vows, you receive, as the monks in Ross Cray say, you get the belt. So you're all dressed in white as a novice.
Okay.
White veil and white robe and white scapular. And when you make your first vows, you take a black scapular and your leather belt,
mm-hmm.
But your white veil remains.
Okay.
In our life it does.
Mm-hmm.
So after your first vows, you are a simply professed sister, and you renew your vows on a yearly basis until solemn profession. So that for the next 3 years, you continue as a junior sister.
That is beautiful.
And you move from the novitiate and your novice mistress to what we call the monasticate, or the juniorate, and you have a junior mistress there. And so there's usually a change of accompaniment at that stage.
Sister Sarah tells us a little bit about the monastic vows.
The vow of stability involves making a commitment to this place and this community.
Mm-hmm.
And if you read Benedict's rule, he's obviously very, he values stability on the spiritual journey very, very much.
Mm-hmm.
In chapter 4, in the Tools of Good Works, he lists 72 kind of virtues, if you like, that we should aspire to. And he talks about the monastery as a workshop in which to hone the spiritual craft.
Mm-hmm.
And the workshop is in the enclosure and in the stability of the monastery.
Mm-hmm.
So it's very specific.
It's like being born into a family, really. And when you become part of a family, you are part of that family.
Yes.
You know, there's no, even though at times you might feel like running away from the family, or, you know, when people aren't getting on, but the real Christian love is staying with it and
exactly.
being there and
yeah.
kind of seeing Christ in other people.
Exactly. And we also take a vow of obedience, and the other vow is a vow called Conversatio Morum, which means in English conversion of manners or conversion of life.
Mm-hmm.
So we're talking about metanoia here.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that openness to change. I think first and foremost, it's important to bring with you to the monastery an awareness of that need to change. Mm-hmm. And that's not something that, I don't mean that in a negative light. I think God gives us that awareness through his love for us, really. It's through God's love, and St. Bernard was very strong on that too. It's through God's love, in fact, that we come to a spirit of compunction. The fathers would talk about compunction. It's through being exposed to the goodness of God and the graciousness of God and the mercy of God that we learn about ourselves and we learn about our deficiencies. Mm-hmm. And it's in that great desire to please God that we embrace that vow, I think, and embrace all the ups and downs and tensions and joys
exactly.
of community life and the support that community life is. You know, to have mm-hmm. that group of people who you feel are wanting the same thing. Mm-hmm. I think when I was a postulant, that was what struck me first about community life was how great it was to be living with a group of people who had the same priorities. Mm-hmm. And it was like finding your soul friends or something, you know.
What about your family and friends? Can you go to see them?
Or? Well, we welcome them to visit us here, and they're very kindly obliged.
Great.
Yes. There's the sisters are very hospitable. It's mm-hmm. part of the Cistercian charism, mm-hmm. the hospitality. So we have a guest house here, and we have parlours here where we can meet our guests, and we have a lovely open space here, mm-hmm. and expanse of the farm to go for walks and to.
That is just gorgeous.
Yeah,
that really is lovely.
So it's nice. And my parents, they would prefer to see me here than see me anywhere else because they love coming here.
I can well believe it. I had the great privilege of sitting in for morning prayer and for Mass. And just as you mentioned, the silence, like, it is just beautiful that there are pauses in the liturgy.
That's
and
right.
Pauses in the
very deliberately,
celebration of the Mass. Mm. And it's not a kind of a fidgety, oh my gosh, something stopped.
Exactly.
But it's a very restful, respectful kind of resting in the Lord, if that makes sense. That,
yes.
You know, you take those moments to, okay, I'm in the presence of God here.
Mm.
And it's beautiful. I can see why it's very attractive to visitors coming in.
The third piece of music is again from the sisters' album, Laudamus. Again, the album is available from glencairnabbey.org or by writing to the sisters at St. Mary's Abbey, Glencairn, County Waterford. And this piece of music is entitled Benedictus and Antiphon. It is from the sisters' morning prayer. So let's have a listen.
Yeah.
Sacred Space on West Limerick 102.
Welcome back to Sacred Space here on West Limerick 102. My name is Lorraine Buckley and you're listening to an interview with Sister Sarah Branigan from St. Mary's Abbey in Glencairn, gone to Waterford.
I think that what I loved about the Rule of Benedict when I discovered it in Ross Cray first was his balance of work and prayer and his emphasis on this workshop that is the monastery and the tools of the spiritual craft. And he's very intent on getting through to his readers and his monks, of course, that this is something that's going to demand all of you, you know. Mm-hmm. So getting back to the day, it's a very balanced day between work and prayer. And that's very, very much valued in our life. Mm-hmm. And the restfulness that you mentioned at Mass is something that we try to instill throughout the day, inside and outside in the environment in the monastery. So it's not just at the office that we're listening attentively. We try to bring that spirit that we worship with at the work of God in all our activities. The three main things that go on in a monastery, very simply, is our worship, the liturgy, our reading. We have a lot of time for Lectio Divina, sacred reading, meditation on the word. And that would include the Cistercian fathers, not just the Bible, and also the fathers of the church and the mothers of the church. And also other spiritual reading that is necessary. And finally, the third aspect of the life is work, which has always been very esteemed in the monastic life in the Cistercian tradition.
Why is that? Why is work esteemed? There might be some of our listeners going, oh, I have to get up out of bed and go to work again. Why could that possibly be esteemed?
Well, those first Benedictine monks that we talked about who left Molem for Cito, they really valued the place of self-sufficiency. And St. Benedict talked about living by the work. A monk is one who lives by the work of his own hands. Mm-hmm. There's an asceticism in work. There's a lovely story that comes to mind of a monk who was giving us a conference, and he said that when he was a junior, he was going through a really difficult struggle and his mental state was fairly tense and he was struggling away, and he was told at work one day to go and clear out a storeroom, which was quite a big job, and he gave himself completely to it. And by the end of the session of work, his mind had so relaxed and he was able to look at the problem from a new perspective. And I think anybody in the monastery can identify with that. There's something about simple manual labour that that does relax us. And the you know, in the monastic tradition, right back to the Desert Fathers, that value was very much preserved. That notion of, you know, we hear about the early Desert Fathers going to their basket weaving. You know, they who chanted the psalms, the whole psalter in a day, would also have time to rest their minds and to employ their hands. And of course, it's at a time where our consciousness is gently disengaged like that fresh meanings and insights just naturally rise to the surface.
What type of work do you do in the monastery?
Well, we have three main areas of income. We have the farm, we have Eucharist bread making, which we bake Eucharist bread and we send it to our customers around the country and outside the country too. And we also have a greeting card department, and some sisters design cards and we print them and we sell them.
It's lovely. It's work that does kind of take your whole self into it, but as you said, it's not overcomplicated work. Very intense work.
Yeah. So, and of course, there's a myriad of things that go on in the monastery that need to be tended to every day.
I can imagine.
There's all of the cleaning and the cooking and the looking after the sick and the elderly and looking after those in formation and those sisters who are employed to teach the young sisters. And the abbess is very busy. She would be very busy in her pastoral role, meeting sisters every day. And there's the bursar looking after the accounts. And And the liturgists have quite a job to do as well, to keep our office, you know, as good as it is.
And it is very good. It's sung beautifully, I must say. It is.
Well, we put a lot of work into it.
You can tell, you really can. And of course, you have the guest house.
That's right, yes, not forgetting the guest house, yes.
Plenty of work for all involved.
Yes.
So what advice would you give to somebody who's discerning a monastic vocation?
I suppose there are different stages in the discernment process. And for somebody who is at the stage where they have identified a sense of call, I would say at that point, the first thing I want to say is stay close to God. Don't forget to nurture your life of prayer, because it's in prayer that we hear the call, and we need to stay near to that. I think it's important for somebody who is discerning to not isolate themselves. For someone who's at the stage where they're really seriously discerning, I think it's important for them to be sharing that with trusted others who they feel will understand. And that might be just a friend in the faith, or a spiritual director. And that could be a very good path to go down as well. I'd also like to say to them to not be, you know, when we, certainly for me, I was wondering for a while which path God was calling me to. I'd like to say, don't be afraid to use vocation directors. They're out there. There's a nominated person in every order and congregation. And I know I used to think when I was discerning that you had to be sure that this was it before you knocked on the door. And I think, no, I would suggest that they not be afraid to knock on the door and to just discuss it. There's no commitment at that stage. Absolutely free to do that and to be properly informed about the different ways of life that there are out there.
And you're quite happy. I mean, it's not a disturbance when you get that call or that email.
Not at all. Delighted. And, you know, often I deal with people who don't end up entering the monastery and who are sincerely searching. And it's a joy to be part of that search with them.
How does one know, or can one ever be completely sure that this is the right path for them?
Well, I don't think there's ever complete certainty.
You're not going to get an email from God going, "Dear Lorraine," or "Dear Sarah," whatever it might be.
Yeah. Well, I mean, a lot of people talk about a sense of peace, don't they? There's a quality to that peace that is a confirming sign. I think we can't know, but we can see signs. In the monastic life, I would say, I notice with people that, in listening to different people's stories, that there is this sense, just like those early monks from Malem, there is this sense of the desert about their call, and a sense, too, of really totally wanting to give oneself to God.
You mentioned asceticism there a few times.
Yes.
Can you explain for our listeners what you mean by asceticism? I mean, it's not kind of disciplining yourself for the sake of it.
Yes, I mean, it's what we're talking about is self-renunciation, self-denial. Thomas Merton, who was a Cistercian monk, put it very simply and very effectively, as he tends to do. Our joy is in proportion to our self-denial. It's not that we're earning God's love or God's approval, not at all. It's the opposite way around. We're responding to God's love. And asceticism is simply about tending the soil, if you like, of our heart and to be ready for the seed of God's word to spring up. In our constitutions, it says that the organization of the monastery is directed to bringing the nuns into close union with Christ. So everything we do in the monastery has that goal of bringing us into closer union with Christ. So all of the practices, the monastic practices and observances, that's their end. They're not ends in themselves. It's not some kind of, self-punishment routine or something. And I think anyone who's here realizes that the sisters live it in a gentle and reasonable way and a wise way.
It's about, I think, it's a little bit like St. John the Baptist said, "He must increase and I must decrease."
Yes.
It's kind of emptying oneself.
Yeah.
Just so that you can be more available to Christ.
Exactly.
Beautiful. Thank you so much, Sister Sarah. If somebody wanted to contact you, how might they do that?
Well, our website is, I'm sure most people have access to the internet now, we're www.glencairnabbey.org. We have a vocations page, and we have our story. Some sisters have written their stories for it, and there's some books we recommend that they can explore the Cistercian vocation a bit more. And there's an email for me, which is vocations@glencairnabbey.org. And if you send an email in that direction, it comes to my inbox.
Perfect.
And we can take it from there. But generally, the discernment process involves visits to the monastery. We have monastic experience weekends. Our next one is the 25th to the 27th of October.
Okay.
So people could consider that.
And what happens on one of those weekends?
Well, a monastic weekend is open to not only those who are specifically looking at a monastic vocation, but just people who are not sure yet and who are just wanting to search. They're very, very welcome to come along too. The weekend involves experiencing what it's like to be in community here. So there's we involve them in choir. They come into choir with the sisters. We have a period of work, of gardening outside. I give a presentation on the life to put them in the picture a little bit as to what we're all about and what it means and what the discernment process is all about, and just some guidance for people and some practical steps they can take to explore things further. And hopefully it is nourishing generally for people's faith, you know, just... and they get to meet the community. So,
which is a privilege in itself and definitely something to be encouraged. So again, I suppose you would just say to people that it's not for people who have definitely decided they want to be a Cistercian sister, that it's open.
Oh, of course, definitely.
Open.
Yeah, and there's no commitment involved at all. And you can come and go, and you're very, very welcome to do it. And it's our gift to those who come. We don't charge for that weekend.
Fantastic.
And then if somebody is seriously interested, it would involve usually another couple of visits to the guest house, followed by a stage which some monasteries call a work-in, which involves being in the community for work and being in choir for prayer, but sleeping and eating in the guest house. So it's sort of a halfway house. Again, it gives them space and time to explore things and, very importantly, to get to know the community and the life a little bit more. And then there is a period called observership or the live-in, and that means spending a period, quite a long period, in the monastery if work allows for them. And they would be living in with the community, but again, it's not a stage of commitment. It's just a coming and seeing at a deeper level.
I love the way the community is supporting the person all the way along.
Exactly.
It really is kind of growing together in it.
Exactly.
In that discernment. Thank you so much for giving of your time this morning.
Not at all. You're very, very welcome. It was lovely to meet you.
Thank you. And I'm sure we'll have you on the program again sometime.
You're always welcome to come to Glencairn.
Thank you.
I would like to thank the Cistercian Sisters of St. Mary's Abbey in Glencairn, County Waterford, for their kindness and hospitality to me in accommodating this interview this morning. If you'd like to find out more about the sisters and their way of life, their website is www.glencairnabbey.org. Our final piece of music this morning is entitled The Commemoration of the Blessed Virgin Mary. Again, it's from the Sisters' album Laudamus. And tune in next week, where we have an interview with His Excellency Archbishop Charles Brown, the Papal Nuncio to Ireland. Until next week, God bless. Bye-bye.
Our Lady, whom we invoke, always be the consoler of the afflicted and a refuge for all in need.
Sacred Space on West Limerick 102.